Hello, welcome
to
Random...
Fuck. I've ruined it again.
I know. This is how it goes. Hello, welcome to Random Access Memories. I'm joined this week by, a legend in the podcast world, quite frankly, Mr. Tristan Ofield. Hello, how are you doing, sir?
Hello, mate. I'm fine. How the devil are you?
Cracking on, you know.
What, you mean getting old? Just getting on with things?
Both. I'm definitely old.
Old is inevitable. Old sucks.
I know. I'm 39 now.
Don't say it. That was never meant to happen.
I know.
Can we just put us back in the box? Start again.
Yeah. The really depressing thing is I was about 26 when we started podcasting. 25, 26.
Just young, full of hope.
Yeah. Life's beating that out of me now. But anyway,
yeah. So I see all these like young ones around me that I work with. It's like, oh, life hasn't crushed you yet.
Yeah, it will. It will.
Anyway, happy thoughts.
Happy thoughts. We're here to talk about computer games in the past.
Yes.
Which is always good. So yes. We start off. How old are you? What year were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in 1981. I was born in Red Hill in Surrey, and I grew up all over the world.
Okay.
Because I'm an arsehole.
I wasn't going to say it, but, you know.
Yeah.
So do you remember the first game you ever played?
It was probably Digger. It was probably Digger, a game called Digger or Zaxxon on an old 086 that we had.
Okay.
Or a brand new 086 at the time with a 5.25-inch floppy disks.
Yes, they were fun.
They were fun. It was also the computer was enormous. Like the hard drive itself was probably, or at least the unit, I don't know, was probably about the same size as one of those Betamax like tape recorders.
Yeah.
Like, it was huge, it took up the whole desk. And now imagine if you opened it up, there was probably only about 3 circuit boards inside it, and it was mainly space.
So many of the things of the time were just space. And I think you and I both know this, because we were probably had a habit of taking things apart.
Yes, yeah.
And
luckily, in most cases, getting them back together as well.
Yeah. Sometimes with a pile of unrecognizable pieces left over.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't necessary anyway.
Exactly. And so, yeah, everything was just so full of fucking space now.
It's true. It's not like the iPhones now where you open up and there's literally like they're a work of art. There literally isn't a gap anywhere unless it's a few nanometers.
I wouldn't fucking dare. Right, I just wouldn't dare. I have been brave enough to take the bottom off my MacBook Pro recently. That's about as far as I'll go with the Apple stuff now. Not getting into that. There is a soldering iron in the house now, so I might in the future, but we'll see. So
just sounds dangerous.
I said so, and I thought that's why I hadn't been allowed one, but Alison bought one for herself. It's like, well, you know,
yes,
I can use that.
She's responsible.
I think that's you're buying into the propaganda there, but
no, I know you.
Yeah, but you also don't forget, Alison's one of the few people in the world who once set their head on fire during a live podcast.
So, and of course, you're doing kind of modeling stuff now, aren't you? Which means that you've got more dexterity.
Well, I got rid of all the modeling stuff. I only lasted.
God,
a few
it's been
months.
A long time since we've talked.
Yeah, I didn't last long with the modeling stuff. To be fair, it was frightfully dull. Do you know what did me in? I got like this enormous model of a Lufthansa 747, something like that, and it had 1,000 tiny little wheels, because those planes do. And it was like, right, sit and paint the outside black and the inside silver. Now repeat that 200 times and you've got the wheels. And I did the first one and I just thought, fuck this, and left it. That's it. And then they collected dust for a bit and then I gave them all to my dad.
Well, you can't say that you didn't try.
No, I can't, but I didn't try. So this 8086 thing, the early PC.
Mm.
That's very early PC stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't. The only thing I can remember is it wasn't a BBC, because I remember taking the, because at the, when I then went back to the UK, my village, you know, all the village schools or all the primary schools had BBC computers.
Yeah.
And I, of course, they all had 5 1/4 inch drives as well. And that was the first time I learned about incompatibility, because I thought, oh, well, of course it fits, therefore I can play this game. And then was very disappointed to find I couldn't.
To be fair, most other things that do that are like that, though. Like VHS tapes worked in every VHS recorder.
And, yeah,
and
true,
so on.
True. Toast so, went in every toaster.
Exactly.
Cassettes in every cassette player. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah, so that was when I learned about incompatibility. And then, so therefore, I could only ever play that game when we'd fly back to Africa. And I used to want to go back so that I could be in the beautiful country, but spend all of it inside playing on my computer.
That was what we did. It's why we're all so pasty.
It's true. It's true.
Of all the people I've talked to on the show so far, not good skin on any of them, including me.
Just you're, let's not talk about your skin.
Yeah, we're all recluse and just in the dark with the curtains closed. It reflects on the screen. Got to have the curtains closed.
It's so true.
So when did you sort of like proper get into gaming then?
I mean, it depends how you define it. Like I was never allowed a console at home. So my parents bought into this whole thing of, oh, you've got to be able to work on it too. And I wasn't as smart as you and the other people who kind of got the Amstrads and things going like, oh, look, it's got a keyboard, you know, really, when they were really buying it just so that they could play games. So I managed to get myself, my first console was an Atari 2600.
Right.
But I was about 10 or 11 when I got it. Like I bought it at a car boot sale for about a fiver with a load of games.
That's that's very late.
Yeah, it is. No, that console. Was when, no, everybody else had Master Systems and NESs, and I had an Atari 2600.
Still, I hear people have some wonderful memories about that.
I adored it. I absolutely adored it. I even like I unwittingly came across E.T. the infamous sort of Atari. But and of course, not knowing anything about it, but wanting to play it, because look, there's E.T. on it. And I can literally remember plugging it in and lasting about 10 minutes and going, well, this is awful. And then taking it out and never playing it again.
Yeah. There's a documentary on Netflix at the moment called something like Easy to Pick Up, Difficult to Master, which is about the history of Atari.
And okay, I've not seen that one.
It's very interesting. I recommend it a lot. And they talk about, you know, what was the Atari designed to do from a hardware perspective? And they're like, it was designed to move 5 pixels left and right. And we were always amazed that anybody really made it do anything.
Jesus.
Was pretty much what they said. So, you know, E.T. is a bad game. It's famous as a bad game, but I don't think it's like really the worst game of all time.
Oh, it really is. It really is absolutely diabolically bad.
I think it depends how you define a bad game, because there are games that just don't work and things like that are unplayable.
What's more famous for being shite than E.T.? I mean, there was no point to it. You just kind of fell down holes and couldn't get out again. You know, it's what happens when you don't realize that games are an art form, and you say to all your workforce, oh yeah, we need to have this out in like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
If you can name me a game that's worse.
I'm going to be thinking about this now.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to it. We'll come back to it. I had a Commodore 64, which again was bought secondhand, but like, when did the Game Boy come into it? To existence. Was that like 89?
I want to say 88, actually. I'm Wikipediaing it now. Cool. 18. Oh, right. Launched in Japan in 89. Oh, it's taking me to the fucking Nintendo page. No, I want. Hang on. No, that's taking me to Google. What are you doing to Google? Are ruining me. They keep showing me the thing I want and then loading lots of adverts. So I click the wrong thing. Where's
So I think like around the, basically around that time of like 89, 90, I had the Game Boy, and that was kind of my thing of choice. Because it had, you know, all the fast loading cartridges that the Atari had. Didn't have to wait for 12 years with the Commodore 64.
Yeah.
I tell you how long I had the Commodore 64. I had that all the way up to Final Fight came out on the Commodore 64.
Did it really? My God.
It did. And I swear to God, about half an hour like to actually load the game, and the delay between like pressing a button and physically seeing the action happen on the console was unbelievable. It was so slow.
Wow, I found, yeah, there's footage of it on YouTube. Do you realize as well, I mean, this is what, episode 10 of this show, and I've spoken to 9 other people besides you, and on every episode I found myself saying, no one I knew had a Commodore 64. No one I knew had an Atari 2600. And I didn't know you were there the whole time.
Yeah, well, the thing is, but I did, you know, I got them very, very late. You know, I mean, what was an Atari 2600 when it came out? Like 100 quid, 200 quid? I mean, I'm sure it was incredibly expensive.
I think they were sort of around the £99 mark, but then that's...
See, that was a lot of money
back
then.
Yeah, that's 1980. £99, which is a shit ton of money.
Yeah, that's huge. I stayed with that, yeah, all the way up to Final Fight. So that's when, I mean, by then the Mega Drive was out. We were into a couple of generations of games of the Super Nintendo by then.
Yeah.
So I was behind a lot of people in terms of the race.
Well, I understand that there would have been probably frustration with that at the time, but it's kind of gone away now with being behind things. I think we're, you know, this is probably the retro gaming thing coming back in as well now. I realize that I'm sort of consoling a young you for being behind the times at the time, which is silly.
Well, it balanced out, but what was really funny is I never thought that I'd really had that many machines growing up, you know, that weren't PCs. And I sat down like to just write out a couple of notes before I like started talking to you, and so the list started getting sort of a bit bigger. I was like, oh, this is a bit embarrassing now. This is way more than I ever thought. Oh God, are we counting like PC boxes and stuff like that, or are we looking at consoles, or is it,
well,
about the games?
It's more about the games, but I mean individual PC boxes.
Oh my God, I had a PS1 and a...
Sort of like PC is a platform in itself, so it's,
yeah,
you know, that's more the thing there. But yeah, the Game Boy stuff as well that you had. Because I'm well into the portable gaming thing at the moment. How long did you have that for?
I still have it.
You still have it?
I still have it. It's in a box. I don't play with it anymore, but I still have it. Generation 1 as well. Like one of the very first biggest bulky ones with the white front and the kind of maroonish like A and B buttons. But I used to play that with my friend Kane in Zambia, and we were addicted to Tetris, as everybody was who had the Game Boy. Like it was the killer app, wasn't it?
For yeah.
That and Mario Land. And we used to play with the link cable between the two Game Boys.
Yeah.
So you're actually in challenge mode. And then so as soon as you dumped like 5 lines or so off your game, it would appear on your opponent's game.
Absolutely. That's how I lose most games of Tetris these days.
It was just so much fun. But the only downside was, you know, you took 4 AA batteries, which for handhelds, I mean, compared to the Game Gear and the Atari Lynx and stuff, you know, it had the best battery life. I think it worked out about 9p a minute when you were playing.
Right.
I see statistics from Games Master. You remember that show?
Absolutely, I remember that show. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it was about 9p a minute, but you'd have to, if you were doing a really long, like if you'd say you were trying to complete like Mario Land or something, you'd have to make sure that you put in a fresh set of batteries like right at the very beginning.
I think we forget about that with the batteries. You know, the Switch can run out of power, but I can plug it in and keep playing while I'm charging it. as can with everything these days. But yeah, you had to take the dead batteries out, and that meant switching the game off.
And there was no cartridge save either.
Yeah. That didn't come till later in the little ones. I think Pokemon probably brought that in.
In fact, with the Game Boy, there wasn't even a battery level indicator. There was just a red light that said, you've got power.
Yeah.
And like slowly that would get dimmer and dimmer. And the monochrome screen would just get more and more transparent. You'd be like, there go, no, as everything faded away. Normally, as you were just about to complete the game for the first time.
I'd have bloody loved a Game Boy. And I'm saying that as someone who had a Game Gear.
Oh, are you kidding me? See, some of us would have gone the other way around. Although their kind of killer app, apart from having Sonic, was Columns, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I could never get the hang of Columns.
Yeah, we played hours of Columns.
Really? It just looked like the inferior Tetris.
It was.
In colour.
Actually, it feels unfair to call it an inferior Tetris. It's a Tetris-style game. Mm-hmm. But it's still fairly addictive. I've got the Game Gear version of it on the virtual console on my 3DS, and it's a go-to thing for time code.
Nice.
As is the Game Gear version of Sonic on there. But other than those two, the game library of the Game Gear was not brilliant. The Game Boy had a lot more to it and a lot more sort of popular culture around it and that sort of thing.
It's been through all the different generations now as well, because my missus has just bought, I think she bought an advanced, which is, I think, is it like in four colors or something like that, but not full color. I can't remember which particular model it is.
Well, the Game Boy Advance was basically sort of a SNES with a bad screen on it.
Okay.
Slightly less powerful than an actual SNES, but yeah, I've actually been looking at those myself recently.
At like Comic Con, and there's always like retro game booths as well, and the games are like a fiver each and stuff. You just imagine back when you were a kid, if the games had been a fiver, like it still would have been expensive, but you'd been eating them. So like, just give me more, give me anything that you've got.
Well, I know, because I discovered CEX's PS2 section, and I've been absolutely rinsing that because they do so many, like every PS2.
You've got a PS2.
Tristan, I've got one of everything here.
Oh, I knew there's a reason why we're friends.
Yeah, I've got a complete PlayStation set at the moment.
Ah, incredible. But absolutely
also
incredible.
Xbox 360, Wii, GameCube.
Yeah. Wii! Oh, sorry, I'm not thinking like, oh yeah, what else? Yep, nice one, thank you, mate.
Yeah, so lots, yeah. But the PS2... Because it was, I had a weird relationship with the PS2 because it was yours, and there's a slight odd difference. It was kind of like, so when uni came to an end, that was.
I was confused. I was like, wait a minute, have you got my PS2? What's going on?
No. But the one I played on was your one that was in our house. Yeah. And so I have weird memories of good games that I played for hours on a console I didn't own and never have. And it was just a case of, I feel like I should get this stuff.
What did you get it for? How much did it cost?
Oh, it was like 25 quid.
Oh, that sounds incredible. That almost sounds like it's worth going to buy one just to get more games.
Yeah, it was so cheap.
I paid full whack for that when I got it. I'm sorry, I realize we're running out of chronological order here. But I remember because when we were at uni, my gran had died and I got through a load of inheritance from her. And one of the first things I did was go out and buy a PS2 at full price. It was about, I'm not sure it was 300 quid or it was definitely above 250.
Yeah, I remember gasping at how much you paid for it.
But oh, that hurts.
Weren't they close to 400 when they came out?
Oh, I don't think they were that expensive, but it was like I was very proud when I'd got it.
I'm just seeing if I can find the UK launch price of the PS2. But yeah, it was an awesome thing. And so I wanted one. And if they're 25 quid each, which they basically are now, then it's easy to do. I'd know exactly how much, but for some reason CEX's website isn't working.
And we rinsed that one at uni. God.
Oh, yeah. It
my PS2 was battered by the time it left.
So was my just Xbox.
It was through two things, right? It was through sheer gaming, like the sheer amount of playing, and the fact that Sturdy would fall asleep for about 3 months when he lived at our place. He fell asleep with DVDs in, and all night the laser would skip back and forth as the menu would time out and loop.
Yeah, it would. I forgot about that with the DVDs.
I've never forgotten about that because you wake up hearing like the theme tune from Black Books on infinite repeat. Be like, oh, I've got to get up and stop this.
I do have memories of being woken up by the sound of the controller vibration in the Xbox controllers because he was sat on the end of my bed playing Halo. And you just wake up. All right, mate. Yeah, all right, how you doing? Do you want this? Yeah. All right. Yeah. That is it.
Oh my God, I've forgotten. That is so true.
Yeah. Our time has changed. I'd go fucking apeshit if I woke up and he was sat at the end of the bed now. Be really.
Well, you'd be freaked out to start with.
Yeah.
Should we get back to the Game Boy?
I was going to say, where were we? The Game Boy. Do you have any? Oh, you'd mentioned Tetris and Super Mario then.
Tetris and Super Mario are the two main ones that I can remember from that.
Yeah. Let's move on from the Game Boy era then. So you went to the Commodore 64 until Final Fight came out.
Yeah.
I had that on the Amiga.
Yeah. Do you see what I'm talking about
here? I do.
And it was at that point that I sort of thought, yeah, this is as far as this can go.
Yeah.
So I bugged my parents to get me an Amiga 500.
Right.
And because it's got a keyboard, it's just like the C64, which of course I did all my work on for school. it's exactly the same. I don't think I typed a single letter on the Amiga 500.
I remember sort of trying to find ways I could use it for schoolwork, but there just weren't then.
There was just workbench, and then you were just like, nah.
There was nothing to do with the school required no form of computer work, and you couldn't.
That's very true.
And there was no internet, so you couldn't use it for like research or anything like that. It was simply.
Oh my God! Do you mean there was a time when there was no internet?
It's weird, isn't it? But yeah.
Forgotten that time.
Oh my God,
when you just
so
used
odd.
To have to know stuff, or if you didn't know the answer to something, you had to
just
you had to go somewhere
know.
To find out, or not know. Yeah.
I couldn't sleep.
It was an archaic time.
Yeah, it really was. What was I saying?
What were some of your favourite games on the Amiga then? Because you had one as well, didn't you? You have an Amiga 600.
We had an Amiga 600 that was like the family computer. And then the following Christmas, I got a 1200 as my my main Christmas present.
Oh, I never knew anybody that had one of those.
Yeah, I had the 1200. I think a lot of my friends had them.
That was a powerful machine, if I remember rightly.
It was at the time, and it had the AGA graphics, which was, I can't remember the actual specs of it, but it was like double the colors on screen, and now you'd think, oh, great, 32 colors, brilliant, yeah. but at the time, it was amazing. And I think we were playing things like UFO Enemy Unknown.
Okay, yeah.
I remember that one taking ages. But, you know, as I said before, we had every game. Because piracy was just the only way. And we got through so many packs of blank discs and shit like that.
Yeah, I can't remember legitimately buying a game for the Amiga, like, ever.
I know we did. I know we had some, but they were a percent of the game library that we had.
I bought Flashback. Remember Flashback I bought Another World and I bought Flashback as well, the kind of sequel to that.
Another World was a huge game when I got the Amiga because it had that animated intro sequence.
Which was wicked, and it had the digital, it was always the
Yeah.
You know, when he's drinking. Yeah. I've still got the game. I bought it. It got re-released for a 25th anniversary edition for the iPhone.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
So I got it, played it, and it's still awesome.
Well, that's my thing. I would watch the intro sequence, and then you move right into the first room where those little worm things jump up and kill you, and I'd just be killed. And I never got past that.
You just had to swim up.
There were so many things that seem obvious now, but at the time, it was weird. And no one really, everyone had it, and everyone thought the intro sequence was cool, but I didn't know anyone who really spent much time playing it.
The intro sequence, that's because it was the intro sequence. But once you got past it, it was, it was another world.
It was.
No, there were some great puzzles in it. The animation was wicked. It had a good story to it as well. It was challenging. It was frustrating to the point of, you know, throwing your joystick at the screen or TV then, because it wasn't a monitor. Mm. Remember that? And I thought that, like, I had to plug my Amiga into my television.
See, that was the key to me getting a TV in my bedroom.
Of course.
I got it in via the Amiga.
That was very kind of, in fact, actually, now thinking about it, I think I did the same. Because TVs weren't cheap either.
No.
Nothing when we grew up was cheap.
It really wasn't. Well, because it was all new. But do you know, I've done a quick Google, like top 10 Amiga 1200 games.
Go on then. Oh, tell me.
Well, this is the thing. None of these, apart from, Worms. So, okay.
Oh, yeah, that's on my list. But Worms is brilliant.
By the time Worms came out, did we have that on the Amiga? I feel like we'd moved to the PC by then.
Mm-hmm.
Because it had all that, again, that was another game with cool animated cut sequences. But they're also listing, like, Fighting Spirit, Alien Breed 3D. It was okay.
The original Alien Breed was brilliant. Okay, go on then.
Simon the Sorcerer?
I remember, I never played that, but I remember it existed.
Onescape, or Onescape.
Never heard of it.
No. XP8. Don't remember that. Whatever that
never
is.
Never heard of it.
Star Trek 25th Anniversary version. You see, yeah, these are all sort of...
Had that on the PC.
So did I.
I think.
There was this awkward period. I mean, much like trying to put Final Fight on the Commodore 64 towards the end of the Amiga, when it just couldn't keep up with what PCs were doing.
Just the loading. That's all. Because I had at the same time as I had the Amiga for like a house computer, we had a PC, like a 286, which was running Windows 3.11.
Yeah.
And I had Wing Commander on there, the original Wing Commander, which is a flight sim that I've always adored. And that had... And I had it on the Amiga 500 as well. I bought it on the Amiga 500 later because my PC, we had a black and white monitor. So I'd never seen it. Like, I had Wolfenstein. I had the original Wolfenstein, Wing Commander. I think it could play Doom if you shrunk the screen down. Do you remember how you could do that to, like, speed up the frame rate? So I would have to play it on the smallest possible screen, about the size of a Game Boy screen, but it was on a 13 or 14 inch monitor. And then I could play it. So I thought, why don't I really desperately want to play Wing Commander in color? I'll get it for the Amiga. And I picked it up secondhand from somewhere, and it came on 6 discs, and I had to swap them just all the time. Like, walk into a briefing, put the disc in, you're about to fire the mission, ejects, put the disc in. Like, it was just so, it broke up the flow of the gameplay so much that I prefer to play it in black and white on my PC, because then I didn't have to wait.
Yeah. I've found a better list of Amiga games here.
Come on, there's some better stuff here.
So it oddly also starts with Worms and then Another World. But we also have Lemmings.
Yes, of course. How did I forget Lemmings? Lemmings is classic.
I've forgotten all of these. I think Lemmings will be more I think more people will remember it as a PC game, but for me, it was definitely an Amiga game. And it was one of the, that was one of the games that was on everything that could run a game.
Yeah, agreed.
Speedball 2.
Oh, Speedball 2. I've got that on my iPhone now.
Secret of Monkey Island, a timeless classic.
See, I've never played Monkey Island, and I know that's sacrilege because it's one of the greatest games of all time. Everybody talks about it, and I missed the opportunity.
It's it is one of the greatest games of all time. Really. I do recommend it. But
was that a LucasArts game?
It was a LucasArts
point and click.
Back
in the day when they were synonymous with amazing adventure games.
Yeah, and it had such a great sense of humor to it. A really great game. Sensible Soccer.
Sensi Soccer. I don't care, but I remember it.
I bizarrely played that for hours, despite an absolute hatred of football. So it can't have been a bad game.
About it.
Yeah, Theme Park. I had Theme Park. Wings. That was a game I adored.
I don't know Wings. What was Wings? Is it a World War II flight sim?
World War One flight sim.
Oh, okay.
So biplanes and shit like that.
Oh, that does sound fun.
And that's the end of this list. Hang on. It said top 10. Oh, top 10. Yeah, I misread it. Yeah, so there are 10 Amiga games.
Okay, because, I mean, there was also a crossover with games like games that were on the Sega platform as well. So you could play Golden Axe, you could play Altered Beast 2.
Yeah.
What else was there? I've got NARC. NARC was the first of a bunch of controversial games to come from Midway.
Sega, I think, did a good job of sort of getting their stuff on other platforms, but only the stuff they should put on other platforms. So you could get those Sega games for the Amiga and the PC, whatever, but not Sonic.
Oh, no, they kept Sonic. Was if you want Sonic, you come to us.
And I'd be interested if Nintendo started exploring that idea. Like, you know, maybe here's Splatoon 2 on the PC, but... Yeah, if you want Mario, you're coming to the Switch for that. I give helpful hints to Nintendo, who need my help all the time.
Of course they do. Of course they do. Otherwise, they're just going to flatline.
They don't know the half of it. They need me. They need me. Okay. Now, that was Amiga. Do you go from there to sort of PC?
From there, I mean, I had a PC. But from there, like console wise, we're talking PS1.
Right. There. Now, okay. Right. So PS1 for me, I didn't like at the time.
I didn't buy the PS1 now. Thinking about it again on this theme of being late, I didn't buy the PS1 till we were at uni together. Do you remember one year I turned up with it? We were at Westfield. So I would have been playing on people because it was quite a portable console.
Yeah.
So people would have been bringing that round. So in terms of chronology, after the Amiga 500, I wouldn't have owned a console then until the PS2 that I bought when we were at uni together, because I bought the PS2 first and then I bought the PS1 after it.
See, I always thought that PS1 was like yours from back in the day. I didn't know you got it at the time.
No, I bought that out in Kuwait on, I don't know, whatever break it was from uni.
Right.
And I've no idea why, but I did.
Well, that was kind of going to be my next question then, because I have a PS1 here because I hated them at the time. I thought I was into PC gaming at the time, which was just light years ahead of the PS1. And so it never caused me to look twice at it. And yet it's the fucking PlayStation. This is a behemoth of a platform that sold tens of millions. And so I went and got one because, again, they're really cheap. And what no one has been able to really point me in the direction of is what are the games to get on the PS1 that are going to show me why it was such an amazing console?
I would say, the ones that we played was like the original Tekken 2 specifically.
Right.
Because I think it was the response time. It was such an addictive beat 'em up game. It was in 3D as well, which was just glorious to look at. I mean, that's one landmark game. I'd say Tomb Raider, the original Tomb Raider on the PS1 was incredible as well. And Resident Evil with its obnoxious inventory system.
Oh God.
But the original Resident Evil was one of the first games where you could play it and be like, this is actually, you could feel quite scared. But it just hasn't, I don't know if you could play it now and feel the same way.
Well, you can certainly play the remaster version and feel that way, because I did, and I did.
Okay.
I got the PS4, it's the They've made the first game like four or five times, and it's the right. latest version of it on the PS4. And I'd never played it before, and it did scare the shit out of me, especially the first time a zombie jumps out at you, even though that moment is so famous in gaming, and I've seen it 1,000 times, and knew that there was a monster around that corner. I screamed like a little baby when it happened. And then you go to save your game, and it's like, and you can only save like this so many times when the moon's full and it's Thursday, and you're like, fuck off. I want to save the game. And I got fed up with that very quickly.
I used to have to carry the separate memory cards as well, didn't you? Could you save without a memory card?
No.
No. Oh, I'd forgotten about that. I forgot about the existence of, I mean, they're just SD cards now, aren't they? They've been replaced with.
I don't think we really have anything like that anymore.
No, I mean you've got your internal and you've got cloud saves and stuff, but I think you could do it on the Wii.
I tell a lie. There's a micro SD card in my Switch.
Okay.
That does have a mic. That is its main storage is micro SD, which has its pros and its cons, I suppose. But yeah, you used to have all the different memory cards and shit like that. I would love to know statistics from CEX, the number of people who buy consoles and then come back in an hour later and buy a memory card. Because yeah. I've done it at least 3 times. And that's me.
It was going to a mate's house and like remembering to take the game with you, but forgetting to take your memory card and be like, ah, shit. She didn't have any of your saved games at all. And you have to start from the beginning.
And then I was reminded of the fun of corrupted memory cards.
I've never had this. Was this a thing?
It was a thing. Like, sometimes, for no reason, a memory card might become corrupted and everything on there is then just dead.
Oh, that sounds like AIDS.
Yeah. And it happened to me a couple of months ago with one of mine. Did a little bit of reading up on it, and what I found out was, if you can just reformat the memory card, they're actually fine. But in a software update, Sony removed the functionality to format memory cards from all of the PlayStations. So if it happens, you just have to throw it away and get a new one. There's nothing you can do.
Jesus.
But that's memory cards for you. There's a reason we got away from them, I think.
Oh, and they must have been expensive to manufacture as well.
Oh, yeah. They weren't cheap. They weren't
cheap
at all.
Mind you, I imagine the plastic casing is probably more expensive than the chip.
And there's an alarming amount of space in them as well, believe it or not.
Yeah, I'm thinking specifically of the PS1 memory cards now, where they were a chunk, weren't they? I mean, easily the size of, about half the size of an iPod Nano.
Something like that, yeah.
And thicker, twice as
much thick. Much thicker. Apple wouldn't make a phone that was as thick as a PlayStation 1 memory card.
Oh, jeez. But
yeah, they're terrible, terrible things. And that persisted all the way up to sort of... It wasn't till the Xbox 360 PS3 era that I think we truly got rid of those. Because I had one for my original Xbox, even though that had its own hard drive inside. But that was something like a 6 gig hard drive, which is, well, might as well not exist now. That, you know,
it's the that 286 I was telling you about earlier, the one I played Wing Commander on, that had a 48 megabyte hard drive. It's just funny, isn't it?
It really is.
48 meg. I've got like MP3s that are bigger than that.
I think I've got still images that are bigger than that. You know?
Bizarre.
How things change. So PS2 games then, really. That's
okay, so PS2. What did we have? Because we had a lot. We started with Oni, I think, which was one of its flagship kind of games. And it was just, I just remember being bored by it and we didn't play it that much. Bouncer. We played Bouncer. Now, a lot of people liked that, but I was quite into it.
I don't remember Bouncer.
Exactly. I think the one you're waiting for me to say, though, is Time Splitters, aren't you?
That certainly was a game that we spent more than a few hours in front of. To say,
you know, God, now,
I'd kind of forgotten about it, to be honest with you. I was waiting for you to say GTA and Tony Hawk's.
Oh, of course, GTA, because I was thinking, like, I can only think of one PS2 game and lots of hours, because it had the music player and it was a DVD player as well. Just hours and hours of watching that cube spin around slowly.
Oh, God, it got some hammer, that machine. It must have just been on 24/7.
Because we used it for DVDs. We used it to play games. We used it for playing music.
Yeah.
It was constantly on. GTA, so that would have been GTA 4.
Three.
Really? I've got that again. I've got that on my iPad.
GTA 3, that when shit got real. When they suddenly went, here's third-person view. Right, okay. Yeah.
I don't think I owned that. I think somebody else bought. Because then we were into this... You talk about this weird thing of playing consoles that you didn't own.
Yeah.
I had this weird thing of people buying, of games I didn't own.
Yeah.
People buying games to play on my console.
GTA 3 was mine.
See, I knew I hadn't paid for it.
Yeah, and then I got Vice City as well.
Fuck.
Both in PS2 versions for your PS2. Very odd, but it's what we did.
That's That is weird. So what else was there? Because all I remember is Time Splitters and just think,
right.
And us playing it for hours. In fact, when we weren't playing GTA 3 or when we weren't watching someone else play GTA 3, we were playing Time Splitters. That's all I can remember.
Right. The other big one, I think, was Tony Hawk's 3.
And again, I was never into that. That wasn't my game either.
I think it was Craig's.
Yeah, I think it was Wipeout.
And
that
Wipeout.
Was it. Wipeout 2049.
I sort of remember different combinations of people associated with different games. So Wipeout, that was you and Craig.
Yeah.
Time Splitters was generally me and Tom and whoever else wandered into the room.
That's because most of the time it wasn't even to play the game. It was just to sit down and watch the shittest person in the world play Time Splitters.
Yeah.
And that was Tom.
It was. And then let's see. So Tony Hawk's was Craig, and that would be another one that would sort of invite over weirdly another 30 people to the house.
Yeah, that would be Frank and a bunch of other people.
Yeah, and I think that game did especially well because of its 2-minute timer. It's
okay.
Built in. You get 2 minutes. When that's up, give the controller to the guy next to you, and people would just sit there for days on end. Playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3.
Right.
But again, I never really played it. It wasn't... Not one I
no,
got
I
into.
No, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it at all. I really couldn't. I'm embarrassed to think... I'm embarrassed that I can't think of another PS2 game. Because I bought the console for a reason and loved it. And like I said, we both agree that it never stopped being punished by somebody. I just think, what the hell I ever played on it? I mean, Wipeout. Have you had Craig on the show?
Not yet, no.
So, I mean, I'm going to ruin the story now, which is that Craig got to, but Craig's, I think he still owns a PS2, and he bought a copy of Wipeout 2049 because we never completed it. It just got to the point where it was just impossibly hard because, the ships were hovering as well. So that how they cornered was very difficult and you could oversteer quite easily. And if you oversteered your jet plane, whatever the hell it was, racer would stop dead. And it would take ages to accelerate again. It was just one of those things where it was a difficult, difficult game.
Yeah.
So you'd look in awe if you were watching somebody playing it well. Oh, and it had a slamming soundtrack as well, didn't it? Because it was like a Chemical Brothers soundtrack. So it was the only game where you could hear like proper decent beat music.
Yeah, it was quite like being in some sort of Ibiza bar as you played it.
Yeah, I guess so. Like it was, you never heard that type of music represented in gaming.
No.
So anyway, Craig bought it and he got to the point where he completed it. It had taken him weeks and weeks, you know, of just sweat, tears, swearing, rage quitting, you know, and everything, and eventually beat the game. And then discovered that you could actually buy upgrades for the ship.
Oh my God.
In fact, it was our, he'd continued with our saved game from uni. So we had millions of dollars from all the races that we played and won. We'd never spent it, never upgraded the engines, the air brakes, weaponry, nothing. We had no idea that there was a shop where you could buy upgrades for the ship. No wonder we got trounced constantly.
Do you know what? I can't laugh too hard because I sort of have done the exact same thing this week.
Oh, Lord.
In playing Bayonetta.
Okay.
I got so far and just that was it. Nothing I could do. It was like a small child playing a game instead of a grown man. It was embarrassing how awful I was at this game and how hard it was. And I just happened to watch some YouTube reviews of it. And you're like, hang on, she's using a different... You can buy weapons? And, oh, there are health upgrades. Oh, I see. And then, so yeah, I made it like halfway through the game before I realized, yeah, she can use bigger weapons and all that sort of thing. I don't know. I think we just don't pay enough attention during the introduction sequences and things like that.
Because then now every introduction sequence is a tutorial as well to show you how Bambi should stand.
Exactly. And I'm just like, yeah, I know how games work. Come on. And yeah, so there's loads of games I own and have played for hours that I don't know anything about, really.
I used to read the manuals. I used to read them.
I've never read the manuals.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, that's how it works.
Used to be the first thing I did whenever I got, like, for example, the Game Boy. Oh, that's the on switch. Oh, that's the screen. You know, something you could tell, but I might have missed out on something.
Well, that's true.
But, you know, now you don't get, well, you don't get the manuals and the tutorial might not cover the shop.
Exactly.
The shop and upgrades part.
Well, clearly it didn't do a good enough job of it in Bayonetta. I can tell you that much. So I think some of the other games we'd have played around the time were Xbox games.
Like, yes, see, Rich had the Xbox, not you, Rich, the other Rich.
There were
Little
two,
Rich.
And we sort of, they hovered around.
Yours hovered in your bedroom, which is how Sturdy would be in there.
Yeah.
Playing Halo, because somebody else would be playing. Okay, so games around that time, then obviously, Fusion Frenzy.
The only time in my life I've enjoyed a, air quote, party game.
Yeah, I just so addictive and had that weird feature whereby you could play, or it was a new feature whereby you could play your own soundtrack to it as well.
Xbox thing. Because it had that hard drive, you could rip a CD to it and then make that CD your soundtrack.
Yeah. So any, if you wanted to change the soundtrack of a game, you could put on whatever it was that you'd recorded, which for us was Fabric Live 9 Jacques Lacan, which we played to death. In fact, I found it weird playing Fusion Frenzy without that soundtrack. And I've got it. I've bought it every incarnation I can. I've bought myself a copy of it.
Yeah, it is weird without that music. What's even weirder is that music ended up here. I don't know how I ended up with that, but it's in my CD drawer.
That is weird.
But there you go.
Fusion Frenzy was a big game for the Xbox, and Halo was the other one, wasn't it?
Halo was the other one, but I do think we got more mileage out of Fusion Frenzy because of that four players, just you need two buttons to play this game, and, you know, everyone was battered anyway. So two buttons and perhaps left and right was all we could manage. And that whole, and the competition aspect of it always helps.
Yeah, it did. It did, and there was lots of shouting and swearing at each other as well. It was kind of, it was like almost like the Mario Kart in terms of people like getting the players to interact with each other, albeit with a limited vocabulary. It reminded me a lot of something like Mario Kart.
No,
just the sheer frustration and rage.
That has reminded me, Micro Machines.
Micro Machines! Oh, Lord! That was it! That was it!
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Which console, though? Which console was that?
That was a PS2 game, I think.
Oh, Micro Machines!
Because you had the multi-block for the four controllers. That was it.
That I feel like there's been a part of my brain, like an itch that I've not been able to scratch this whole time we've been talking. That's what it was. What a game.
Yeah.
What an addictive game.
Oh, God, we spent some hours on that. I believe it was Micro Machines V4, from what the internet is telling me here.
Because I got it on the iPhone, but it's riddled with micropayments.
Oh, I downloaded it. I saw they'd brought it out and downloaded it and then never played it.
Yeah, it's just so, it's like herpes.
Yeah, I don't like the microtransaction shit. I don't do that. But yeah, Micro Machines, that was another one.
Oh, I feel so good. I feel like I'm an inch taller. Yes. What a game. Just the incredible, so much thought that had gone into designing all the courses. And then you know that more than once we got battered and you'd be resting, like your head resting on the kitchen table, looking at the mess that was on it. And some dickhead would go, normally Craig, to be fair, would go, so he'd like, "Oh, mate, this would make a wicked Micro Machines course." And you're laughing because you know it's true.
Absolutely. And then everyone starts looking at it that exact same way and planning out and all that.
Oh.
I remembered another one, SSX.
SSX. Oh, yes, again. That was a good one for showing off combos. It was a good one for people to watch.
Yeah, you were good at that. I could never do it. And having bought them all again for my PS2, I still can't do it and have given up.
That was another one, but that had its own soundtrack that was brilliant as well. Because now we're getting into there's a whole subculture of people who listen to game music, isn't there?
Yeah.
But you're now crossing with the PS1, we're crossing into the realms of starting to get, well, you've got CD quality music. So we're getting, what am I trying to say? We're starting to get music that's orchestral music composed for games as well.
Well, it's more like, and I hesitate to use this phrase, but I hope people know what I mean when I say proper music.
I get what you're saying.
It wasn't a MIDI file being run and interpreted by the console. It wasn't somebody at the game company's interpretation of that popular track of music that we all knew. It was the actual track suddenly, because you could put that on a CD. And so, yeah, I know, obviously, whatever music is music, there's what's proper music and all that. I just mean, I think I've been clear.
I just had this where it said PS2, there was just a big question mark, and now I've got games scribbled all around it. Micro Machines. I want to get together just to play that. Is it as good as I remember it being? I bet it is.
I think it actually is, you know. Yeah. But only as a four player experience. And I keep seeing these games that are not just multiplayer, but much more sort of party type games for three, four players. And it really makes me miss being a student. And you sort of realize, surely the only people playing these are students. Because no adults have this I'll get three of my mates around and we'll all just play games all night. It's like, no, we're grown-ups now. Nothing fun happens. So it must all just be students. And
students and kids.
Yeah, and it just makes me sad, and I try to ignore them now.
I weep for these days. This is a really nostalgic This talk's taking me places that I'd forgotten about.
Me too. It's very good. It's very good. I'm just trying to remember some good Xbox stuff from the time.
Dead or Alive. Not that it was good, but we played it because it had the booby bouncing.
Exactly. But that was a PS2 game as well, DOA2.
And I'm actually gesturing with my hands. But I think it was actually better on the Xbox.
They've made some great strides with boob physics in recent years, apparently.
Have they?
Yeah, yeah.
It's something I no longer take a keen interest in.
It's, well, I never, but yeah, I remember a couple of weeks ago on Gaming News, we did a story about what might even be the latest edition of Dead or Alive, and how the better, if you had one of the higher end graphics cards, it was going to do some better boob physics. And so you would get more boob bouncing if you had a better graphics card to play the game with.
It was like, right.
Guys, you know there's porn online, right? Just if you want to see boobs, you can see actual boobs for free. So stop wanking over computer games. That's not right.
No, it's not.
Mind you, the same people were the ones that wanted to see Lara Croft naked and shit like that. It's just... like, they're not real women, guys. They're just drawings. Just drawings.
And not even good ones. I mean, you know, the original... I'm paraphrasing, but to be fair, like, the original Lara Croft looked... I mean, she was texture map polygons in the early generations. So, I mean, she looked like she'd been rendered in fuzzy felt.
Absolutely. With her triangular boobs and all that stuff.
So pointy.
As we talk, I'm just trying to find a list of Xbox games. Just in the hope that I'll be reminded of something. I think I got more mileage out of the Xbox after uni.
Okay.
I kind of feel.
Because I never saw another one after uni. That was it. That was the only time I've ever seen. I don't believe they sold it. I believe Microsoft made one console, sold it to us, and that was it. And then moved on to the 360.
It wasn't long after that the 360 came out. To be honest.
But do you remember? See, now Microsoft is a name synonymous with gaming. And before the Xbox, it wasn't at all. Do you remember there was so much doubt as to whether Microsoft could actually pull it off?
Hell yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There was a, what do they think they're doing?
Yeah, and like they're going to fuck this up. It's Microsoft. It's going to be awful. Not forgetting that, you know, Sony only a few years ago had
done exactly the same thing.
Well, yeah, they'd had no track record in games whatsoever. It's hard to believe that the PS1 launched with a decent set of games. But you know what happened? Microsoft turned up and said, "Oh, here's the console. You'll love it. Oh, and here's Halo. Bang." And that was all they needed. And everyone lost their shit over Halo, and I don't know why, because it's boring as fuck. But in terms of like playability, it's right up there.
Oh, it was miles ahead of anything we'd had before. And do you know, looking back and looking at the games I've managed to find recently, there is nothing on the PS2 that comes close to it.
No, I actually, in terms of graphics and stuff like that, I would agree, because all I'm thinking of is Time Splitters, and that's not a patch in terms of how it looked. I can remember that wasn't a patch on Halo on the Xbox.
And there were little things in the AI as well. I seem to remember it was the first time you'd throw a grenade at a bad guy and it would realize, scream and run away.
Oh, the little like...
Yeah. Or things would jump out, shoot at you and then hide again. And that doesn't happen in Doom. That doesn't happen in Quake. It was really like you're fighting a real thing for the first time. Mm. And I think that's what did it. I think that, yeah, that helped the Xbox along no end. And Halo was the game that sold the Xbox to me.
Yeah, it was the game that sold the Xbox to many people.
But do you know, though, I still have fond memories of playing Halo 2 as we were doing all the Port 11 media stuff and getting it hooked up in hotels and stuff like that. I don't so much miss that part of it, but yeah.
So after this, we take there's a jump, which is we go to there's no more consoles for a while, and then it's the Wii.
Right. Don't remember. So yeah, you had a Wii. Okay.
I bought a Wii very late. Again, like after, it was after I'd seen, because you had the double, you had Wii 60.
We did, yeah. Alison bought a Wii, I bought the Xbox.
Yeah, and I played Wii boxing for hours and hours and hours at your place and was just blown away, jaw on the floor, astounded with Gears of War, with the graphics on Gears of War.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I played, I could not believe it, and I think you took such delight in seeing the look on my face as well.
Well, it was 300 quid well spent then.
Oh, yeah, totally. But also, this was the Xbox then became the long, or Xbox and PlayStation 3 became the longest console generation, didn't they?
Yeah, by a long shot.
Because it was about 8 years that generation lasted, and no generation before that had lasted that long.
Just looking it up. So that was the seventh console generation. And according to Wikipedia, which again, Google has not. I'm having some Google issues on this browser here. Let's see. Seventh generation of video consoles. Can we get a rough date on that? No, not without me reading. Oh, wait. 2005 for Xbox. Discontinued in. No, Wikipedia is being mean to me.
Well, I mean, the 360, though, is still like alive and well. And I made a point. I got when I've had like a couple of them over the years. But when I moved down to London 2 years ago, somebody was giving one away. So I was like, oh, yeah, of course I'll take it off your hands. Of course I will. And it's the first time I've realized, and I don't know why it's taken me so long to realize this, but games are kind of like the same as films and books in terms of a good game is still a good game. It doesn't matter whether you buy it when it first comes out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or whether you pay. So I've had the joy of going into CEX and being able to pick up, you know, just loads of Xbox games that I've really wanted for a fiver at a time and playing the living shit out of them and finding that, you know, because there's so many that I missed. There's so many. But, you know, getting to play Gears of War again, Arkham Asylum is one of the greatest games ever, period. In history of man,
it is a very good game.
But I loved that. That is probably the most immersive game I've ever played. I think because I loved. I mean, free flow combat is basically just quick time events. Almost like you're just pressing the same button mashing once you get the rhythm, and it's still impossible to do. I can't get a combo over 40.
It's one of those things that frustrates me as to why I can't be perfect at it.
Exactly. Why you can't be perfect every time as well, because I see videos of kids on YouTube who sound like their balls haven't dropped, and they're just like, oh, yeah, here's how you do, you know, the 80 combo. Watch. It's like, oh, you bastard.
Yeah, and that has spread through other games, that feeling. I mean, is it Shadow of Mordor? The Lord of the Rings game that I played.
I loved that.
It's the same thing. It's the same combat, and you just wait. You hit the thing, and when it's going to hit you, it'll flash blue. So press the X button, and you're like, okay, I can do that. And then you don't do it. What the fuck is wrong with me? What? It said press the. I saw the thing. I went to press, and I didn't do it. Why am I? Am I a moron? What the hell is going on? So, yeah,
that was good. I was a good game as well. Shadow of Mordor.
I kind of gave up on it. It got a bit,
really?
Yeah.
No, I completed it.
It's one I've come too late, and it just felt a bit grindy, but yeah, I can appreciate what's good about it. It's just other. It came to me sort of 2017-ish, so it was...
Okay, yeah. Well, then again, that's what I played it last year as well.
Yeah, it was just up against some fierce competition last year for my time. But yeah, I've developed this attitude of PS4 games. Can't wait to play them in 10 years.
Okay.
You know, because there are lots, and I want them all, and I can't have them all because I'm not fucking Richard Branson. So I have to wait till they're all cheap, and they will be one day, and I realize...
Of course they will.
I'll enjoy them all just as much then as I will today. So Yeah.
It's true. If they're good, if they were good games, then, you know, they'll still be good. So yeah, I've just been enjoying playing like all the Arkhams. So Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, and then the lesser one, Arkham Origins, which is still all right, but it's just the writing's nowhere near as good. Because those games are not only about the combat, the writing and the voice acting, because you've got, you know, you're playing with Batman. It's the voice of Kevin Conroy, which just pulls me in so much. And then, of course, you've got Mark Hamill doing the Joker as well. So it's wicked. Like, you know, you get to control, you know, the cartoon hero and villain.
I would like to try the Batman VR game on the PS4.
I'd be curious.
Have you had a go at all on VR yet?
Only the Star Wars Void. Right. I don't know if you know about this. It's an experience I think it's touring the country, which is the best VR I've ever experienced. I've not tried any of the actual console stuff. I've never tried PlayStation VR. I've never tried Oculus Rift.
Right. Me either. It's reached a point where it's intriguing to me.
And so it should be.
Yeah.
Because it's only going to get better. But the thing that will make the huge difference is when you get like a little any direction treadmill. You know what I mean? You remember when you used to get like the Dance Dance Revolution mats and stuff,
which I'm
sure neither of us ever played, but we know they existed. You know, you just want like a square meter on the floor that can move in any direction. And then that's it. That's pretty much full immersion.
It really is, isn't it? Because then you can stop us walking into walls and hitting people in the face with controllers and shit like that.
Because it screws my brain up. Like when I went to Void was clever because Void has, if you imagine, you've got like a corridor layout in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's got full texture map walls, you know, it's a full 3D experience, right? Now imagine that you build a physical course of corridors that match the course in the game.
Okay.
Right. So it's not augmented reality. It's like full blown VR. But when you walk forward, you are physically walking down a corridor that matches the corridor, the distance and width of the corridor in the game. So then when you lean out and touch a wall in the game, you physically feel the wall against your hand.
Okay.
And that was insane. And because it was Star Wars, of course, there's no handrails anywhere. Do you remember that joke of all I want is a handrail? Yeah. So like I had to walk across a gantry that I imagine was probably there. Okay. At this point, there isn't actually a gantry. You've got proper floor, but in the game, it's a gantry and it's probably about half a meter wide, 2 meters long and a million feet up in the air. And we're getting shot at, and because we're walking, you know, gantry off whatever platform we're on onto a waiting ship. And I've got Mish behind me going like, "What's wrong with you?" And I'm like, I'm okay. just give me a second. And actually have to take a breath and go and put one foot in front of the other to walk across. Cause my brain's going, you're going to die. It was just incredible. Like no motion sickness, nothing like that. Because that's the barrier for a lot of people, isn't it? And I could see how that could make you feel extremely ill. But if you just get that little bit of floor that moves to stop us tripping over shit, think about the processor power that we have now that we didn't have the first time in the 90s when we tried to do it. I say we. It's nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like as a human, we as the human race.
Of course. And so in a couple of years... well, I will keep an eye on it. I mean, things like this always come down to the game support, as Microsoft found out with the Kinect. And damn it, if they haven't actually brought out a lot of games that seem really cool. Like, I do want Starfleet Bridge Commander.
Of course you do.
First fucking game they show me, here's you sat on the bridge of the Enterprise. Oh, you bastards, no, I need that. And then Fallout 4 VR version, Doom VR, which I can only assume actually gives you PTSD. and the Resident Evil game that just looks terrifying. And for hours of fun, look up YouTube videos of people playing these games or better yet, people's nans playing these games. Because it's just hilarious. It's going to happen one day, I suppose, but not yet.
Yeah, but it's definitely getting there. It's definitely getting there, isn't it? What else was fantastic on? I mean, there's so 8 years of games on the 360. Like, just so many good games, and I can't think of a single one right now.
Well, you get into sort of the larger franchises that are still around. So things like your Call of Duties came along.
Assassin's Creed. Still playing. There's quite a few Star Wars games, aren't there? But what was the one that actually had a story to it?
Not Jedi.
And I'm thinking of Jedi Apprentice. They all start with Jedi something. I nearly said Dark Forces then. Dark Forces. Oh, dear. Anyway, lots of Star Wars games.
Lots and lots of Star Wars games.
But mainly the Batman games are what I Batman and Call of Duty. Play Call of Duty. Mish and I like to play survival.
Is that the zombie thing?
No, well, there's zombies on one of them, but like on, I think on Call of Duty Infinite Weapons Maximum MacBook Pro 3, it's just like loads of different maps where you survive as long as you can. And we probably play that at, I don't know, five. We'll have at least one game a night, I'd say.
Wow.
Normally, just to try and, because it's something we love playing together, and just to see if we can beat, like, we've got high scores on every level, and just to see if we can survive one more round.
Alison and I have trouble playing together.
Oh, we love it. We've got, there's some great stuff out, but I mean, we're moving on to the Xbox One then, which is what I'm currently running the 360 and the Xbox One next to it. Which I got bought as a birthday present. So, you know, awesome. But we've been finding, because Mish and I do play quite well together, and we enjoy co-op games. So we've been looking at, you know, trying to play the best co-op games that are available. And one of them is Overcooked. Have you heard about this?
We have Overcooked. Yeah. Right.
There's nothing you can explain. Like, if you're trying to explain it to somebody else, there's no way you can explain it that makes it sound fun. It's like, well, basically, you're cooking in a restaurant, and one of you prepares the meat, well, one of them prepares the onions, and you're like, yeah, fuck off. That sounds awful. Why would you play this game? Because it's so addictive.
It really is good.
If you set yourself, you know, the requirement, in order for us to move on, we have to get 3 stars on a level. And then it becomes incredibly addictive.
I think we set ourselves that standard and then just abandoned it the first time we didn't get 3 stars on a level.
Fair enough.
We tend to do better with competitive games, which spawn fewer arguments. But then you have the problem of, well, one of us always wins then, and the other is a sore loser. So they never go on much further. We've had one game of Mario Kart, and that's our thing. It's just because we're both petty people and enjoy different types of games. You know, she's much more Assassin's Creed-y than me.
Yes, that kind of thing.
I tried to get her onto Shadow of Mordor, but...
Sneaky and stabby.
Yeah, whereas I'm not. I don't know what I'm into at the moment, to be honest. There's so many big things out there that I've been playing through. So, yeah, I don't even know what my... desire, best type of game is these days. So how do you find your Xbox One then?
And once I've learned how to navigate the fucking menu system, good God, that made me feel old and angry. I adore it. I absolutely adore it. It's a great console. You know, managed to all my purchases. All my Xbox purchases from online are available. We use it for like, it's used as an entertainment center as well, like we did with the 360. Like we use it for Netflix and Amazon Prime and YouTube as well. Like anything that could benefit from a large screen. And it's just a great bit of hardware.
Cool.
And I had the same thing. I had the same thing or the same feeling when I booted up the Xbox One for the first time as I did when I saw your 360 years ago, which is again just like, oh my God, like the step in graphics is just, you know, have me rubbing my eyes going, like, there's certain points where you can't I can't tell if this is real or not. And it's playing stuff like, you know, Star Wars Battlefront. There's moments in that game where the rendering's photorealistic. And for someone who's a Star Wars nut like me, it's just a joy to behold.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I must admit, I'd become increasingly more interested in the Xbox One in recent months since they've started really pushing the backwards compatibility stuff. Because even though I've got the original hardware here, for the other two Xboxes, if they're doing stuff like upgrading graphics to HD levels and stuff like that, which it seems they are,
yeah,
that is an attractive proposition.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, companies like Microsoft and Sony and stuff, I've got to accept the fact that backwards compatibility is a thing. They've got to make it work. People, especially if they're trying to do the same thing with consoles as they are with fucking handsets for phones, you know, and give it an upgrade every 3 years. I think that 8-year gap was too much for them.
Yeah.
I really do. So they're trying to push the hardware that little bit each time. And I'm not sure if that's going to work. I mean, I'd like to think it won't, but, you know, it's humanity, so somebody somewhere will pay. But as long as they're giving us the backwards compatible stuff, then I think people will be happy to move, maybe not as often as they would like, but well, I think it might speed up people's purchasing power.
Have you tried at all the, and I can't remember what it's called now, the Xbox, the streaming game service that is part of it?
No, I haven't, and I forget what it's called. There's no games on there that interest me. But right. When there are, it would be something I'd be interested in, definitely.
I've had a go with the PlayStation one.
Okay.
Because there's like a week's free trial. And it was, I mean, it's basically OnLive, which you'll remember was an early attempt at this.
Yeah.
And the technology is the same. And it really is good, but it all comes down to your internet connection. And while it worked pretty well for me, I was still aware that it was not running on that console.
Because there's one for Mac now as well. Nvidia have done one for people on the OS platform who want to game. But again, it's totally dependent on bandwidth.
I'm actually signed up for the beta on the Nvidia one.
Really?
I don't have it yet. I'm on the list.
Okay.
I will occasionally get an email from them saying, "Hey, you're on the list." And I'm like, "Hey, I know I am. When are you going to bring it out?" But it's a way forward, and it's especially with things like backwards compatibility, it really helps things along.
Yeah, because then they don't have to worry. They're not going to have to worry as much about hardware, are they, at all? Because it's rewriting the code to match the new hardware that's the issue.
Well, they've got a computer. They've got their own PS3 somewhere that's running that game, and it's being streamed to you over the internet. So
yeah, because like for example, when I with the Xbox One, when I open up Fusion Frenzy, it shuts down and reboots pretty much. It boots an emulator, a 360 emulator.
Yeah.
In order to play. So, yeah, so it's just going to avoid having to do any of that. And it's going to mean that their entire back catalog will become available. And then, I mean, talk about the legacy that the consoles leave behind them and the amount of games. I mean, that's so attractive.
It really is. And for a nice monthly fee, I think the PlayStation one is something like $12.99.
Yeah, which, that doesn't break the bank. That's fine.
It could be a way forward. But again, we need better infrastructure of internet. Because Sony have done all they can to make that as good an experience as possible. It boiled down to the ping time on my internet connection and that sort of thing. So it's unfortunately it's not down to the gaming companies to make the experience any better right now like that.
It's always been down to BT or Virgin to actually start replacing copper wires with fiber.
Yeah, I need my gigabit Ethernet internet and then we'll be fine.
That's all that's needed. I have to give a shout out to a game though, as just going back to working like in co-op. Have you heard or played Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time?
I've heard of it, but I haven't played it.
So this we've just finished, and we this was the source of much shouting, mainly from me. There's a spaceship, which is spherical. It reminds me the way it flies of Jet Set Willy on the NES. It's just like it feels like the ship has a proper weight to it.
Right.
So whenever you try and move, you can feel it getting over its own inertia.
Okay.
Well, that's by the by. There's five stations that need to be manned. So this is how bad my maths is. I think there's seven stations that need to be manned. There's four guns. There's the engines, the shields, and the special.
Right.
What's that? Is that four, five, six? I think it's seven stations. And only two of you.
I see.
And that's the game. So you're being attacked by you're being attacked by alien ships and stuff, and you have to run from one to the other. But if you're both on the guns, then nobody's on the engines and you're not moving. Or if one of you's on the guns and one of you's on the engine, you might need to move the shield around to the other side of the ship. So it's really cool. You're just running frantically to try and survive.
That sounds pretty cool, actually.
It's fantastic. It's so much fun. So that was that's like £12, which for a game now is nothing compared to, we're paying upwards of £70 for some of the new games, which is insane. And we've not even got onto the scandal that was, Battlefront 2.
Well, I've just kind of stayed away from games like that. But it's increasingly more difficult to do that on the PS4 and the Xbox One.
Well, the difficulty is now because we caught up, you actually have to, if I want to go back and play get some 360 games, I'm not missing out on anything. I can just pick up a game and that's it. But now because we've caught up, you're looking at it going, okay, I can't buy this game now. I have to wait 2 or 3 years, and then it'll be down to like a tenner. So you are physically missing out at that moment in time. And that's why it's harder now.
Well, also the prevalence of them, there just seems to be, it's all about the fucking loot boxes and DLC and season passes and games as a service and all that shit. And I kind of just like buying a game and playing it.
Yeah, I think if I'm paying £70 for a fucking game, the game's finished. I'm taking it home. It works. There's no patches. That's it. And the season pass thing is annoying as hell. I haven't, DLCs. I think DLCs, it's a gift, quite frankly. Like if they want to give it to you, that's fine. If you want to pay for it, that's fine. But I don't expect it. Like it's not something I have to have.
Yeah, I think game publishers have been increasingly moving into the area of making things DLC that shouldn't be DLC.
I was just about to say that.
I mean, what is it? The new Metal Gear survival game, you're paying $10 for a second save slot in the game.
Christ.
It's shit like that, really.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of incomplete, incoherent thought. To be perfectly honest.
I noticed it again with Battlefront. I was like, there's not that many levels on this. And then you look at the DLC and just think, I could think of about 10 years ago, this would all have been part of the original release.
Yeah. And they admitted that it probably would have been, which kind of rubs salt in the wound. They rushed that game out to get it to coincide with Force Awakens.
And that I didn't know.
And so that's why most of the game is DLC.
Yeah, but they didn't have to make us pay for it then.
No, they didn't, but it's EA, so they did.
Did, yeah. I'm so pleased at the backlash, but it's upset me because, I tweeted Disney, I tweeted EA, I wrote on forums and stuff like that, and they just think, I don't even do that for politicians and I'm that pissed about Star Wars. What's wrong with me? But, I refused point blank to buy that game until it came to a reasonable price.
Yeah. I the first one or the second one?
The second one.
Oh, you've got that right. Okay.
I've got the first one. I'm waiting. I keep watching every week the price to buy it online on Xbox has varied between £57 and £35. And it just keeps going up and down just to try and get people 1 week and then the other week. And so I'm just kind of sat there going, if it goes to 30, I'll buy it. If it goes to 30, I'll buy it. But it just won't get there. And now, you know, it looks like they might be losing their license. So they've whacked the price right up again because they just want to try and get everything they can for as long as they've, you know, they're going to have the ability to sell it.
This is, it's really odd. I'm looking at it on Amazon and it's $29.99 on the PS4 and $56.99 on the Xbox One.
Jesus.
And I can't imagine think of a reason why. That's insanely weird. Because I'd noticed, I mean, most of the sort of AAA big games after Christmas plummeted in price because no one bought any of them. Because you had your Battlefront 2 backlash, you had your, God, what was the Shadow of War backlash?
Yeah.
Anthem. Not Anthem. God, the other shooter game. Forgotten it already. Destiny, that's it.
Right, and Destiny 2, didn't you? Yeah.
And so these games just got decked on over Christmas, which I believe Nintendo probably owned.
It's because when parents don't like spending money on computer games. Like, they don't. They really don't. And they've got more and more expensive, because they see them as a waste of time in most cases. They're getting more and more expensive, and they don't want to have to shell out more. Again, it's like £70, and then if a game's going to pay £70, that's it. £40 is too much, quite frankly.
Mm.
That's a lot of cash.
I feel so bad for parents of kids who sit playing, you know, FIFA, and then start complaining. I want to buy some in-game currency. I need to buy this player. I need to buy that. I need to buy this other thing. And your parents are sat there thinking, I've just paid £50 for this game.
Yeah, why do you really need this player? Is it actually going to make a difference? No.
And it's must be horrible. Must be horrible. Yeah. I'm just noticing Metal Gear survives down to £25 on Amazon. That game came out this week. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, there is backlash.
What's the deal with this one? Because I don't know about it.
So it's a game Konami had bought out to basically cash in on the Metal Gear name. It is not a sneaky game like a Metal Gear Solid game. It's a sort of zombie survival game.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And so that in itself has angered fans that it merely exists. Mm. You know, it's like them putting Star Wars on a game and it's actually a horse racing game, but it's Star Wars horses, you know, that kind of thing. And on top of that, it's apparently a shit broken game. It doesn't even fucking work. It's garbage as a game. And on top of that, it's so onerous in what it makes you pay for beyond the price of the game. It's just fucking obnoxious. Like I say, it's a £10 DLC to get a second save slot.
I mean, microtransactions for the phone platform, I get it. It's a necessary evil. I don't like it, but I'll accept it because, you know, you've got to make your money somehow. Fine, but not on the main consoles. Like, and the people are voting. See, this thing with EA and FIFA, they've been able to push it so much because that fan base is you know, ravenous. They want the next thing. They want the players. Yeah. They've got to get – how different is FIFA, you know, 2016 from 2017? I doubt it's very different at all apart from the players are wearing different coloured sprite tops, you know. But whatever they've done, that fan base has paid for. And if I was one of the people – in the boardroom making those decisions for the Star Wars game, I would have said, yeah, you know, we can get away with this. Of course we can do it because we've got a history of getting away with it. But it's nice to see, you know, why wouldn't they buy our game? And it's nice to see that people have actually started voting with their feet and saying, you know what, don't have to buy your games.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing it's doing to the industry. I think it's resulting in a big rise in indie developers doing well. Because people are looking for those other games, and a good game is a good game. It doesn't matter how many people developed it or how many hundreds of millions of dollars was spent on developing it or whatever. Stardew Valley was made by one guy.
And Super Meat Boy is made by two, and Super Meat Boy is a brilliant game.
And so people are voting not only to not buy these games, but to then buy from indie developers, which is great.
Because it's almost harking back to the early days with, you know, the C64 and the Spectrum and stuff like that, where pretty much anybody who could program could be a games developer.
As long as you could have cassettes copied,
yeah,
then you could do it. And it is kind of doing that. You're right. And I think, you know, companies like Nintendo treating indies the way they have done, where they very clearly work on a policy of there is no distinction in their stores between AAA titles and indie games. They are all games. And so you're shown all kinds of stuff. The PS4 is not that bothered about showing me.
Didn't know that Nintendo had an indie developer platform. I didn't think that would be their thing at all.
They fucking love it, and they do so well out of it. So well. It's become the Switch has become the go-to platform for indie developers right now.
That's incredible.
Things sell just so much better on there. And so you've seen people bringing out games on the Switch where the Switch version outsells the PS4 and Xbox version combined. And that sort of thing. So
I had no idea about this. I didn't think that would be their thing at all. So that's now making me think, ooh, what else could I buy?
Oh, I'd very much recommend a Switch.
I've never physically seen one being played. I've only seen them, like, you know, through the window in CEX taunting me.
Yeah, you'd like one. You definitely like one.
Speaking like quickly of games, a game that really didn't need the graphical power of the Xbox One. I played South Park Stick of Truth on the 360,
yeah,
and then got Fractured Butthole on the Xbox One. There's no need for that to be an Xbox One exclusive at all, considering, you know, graphically it's just pieces of paper slapped on top of one another. But that is two fantastic. I'm not a massive fan of turn-based combat at all, but the level of detail that's gone into both of those games, especially if you're a fan of South Park,
yeah,
is phenomenal. There's so many callbacks. It's this incredible. They've managed to be self-referential without being twats. And I have no idea how. You know, they're like, hey, remember when we did this thing? And you don't want to vomit. I don't know how they've done it. It's fucking genius.
I didn't get on with Stick of Truth so much. But
okay,
I hear lots of good things about Fractured Butthole. And I appreciate the name very much. So I might check it out at some point.
So clever. I found myself almost feeling like I was too old when I played Fractured Butthole, because the method of play between the two games is very different. And it took me, I had a false start with Fractured Butthole because I finished Stick of Truth. It was like right straight into Fractured, and I put it down for about 2 or 3 months because I found it too complicated.
Right.
But for some reason, suddenly it's just clicked, and now I can't see what the problem was. We're going to have to wrap things up, mate, because I actually have to pretend I've been at work done things.
Yeah, I was going to say it's time to wrap it up anyway, because I think we're pretty much at the end. But there you go. That has been a wonderful trip down memory lane, or your memory lane that I've
enjoyed. Thank you. That's been so much fun. And there's things we haven't touched on, but it doesn't matter because I can remember Mortal Kombat and Altered Beast, but, you know, but I didn't remember Micro Machines.
Well,
and, you know, there you go.
I think some people are maybe going to have to do like a second appearance at some point. So, you know, nothing. You can always come back one day.
Oh, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been a pleasure. And I'm obviously now going to plug my new show as well.
Absolutely.
So if you want to hear myself and my friend Chris Ball talk films, pop culture, and literally nothing else, you can find us on Simply Syndicated. And we're releasing every other Monday morning just to try and make, you know, that start of the week a little bit less shitty. Let us brighten your walk to work or your train ride to work.
There it is. And the show's called What's in the Box.
That would have helped, wouldn't it?
It is. It would. I'd have mentioned that first, but you know,
I was just reading. I was just like fucking going through that, thinking, I am nailing this. It's like, oh yeah, whoops.
Say the name of the show.
That's it. What's in the box?
It's worth pointing out, I'm also currently re-releasing all of Movies You Should See and Make It So, so we can be heard all over the place, you and I, talking absolute drivel.
That's terrifying.
I had to put a warning on the front of the Movies You Should See and Make It So episodes.
Yeah, I've seen it. And to be fair, when I was like, nah, that's fair, to be honest.
It's like, yeah, I know I've said some horrible stuff that I wouldn't dare say now. So that it's more for me than anybody else. There you go, everybody. You can check that out. And so don't forget as well, you can subscribe to Simply Everything and get ad-free versions of this show and all the other shows as well on a special secret podcast feed just for Simply Everything subscribers. And also we have a Patreon at patreon.com/simplysyndicated. So thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you, Tristan. And I'll be back another time with somebody else. Bye-bye.